the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and today we'll be presenting the technician class. This is old class, I guess, number 5 that we've been doing. So I'm going to do the preamble, and then we will begin. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This event will be in an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a technician class license. This course will be conducted with 2 sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to SCARS, that's S-C-A-R-S, server, at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614 or All-Star node 27404, letting it drop. For those that are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at voip@scarsvoip.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connected to the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at voip@scarsvoip.com. Letting it drop one more time. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at voip@scarsvoip.com. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Well, I don't even hear a Tweety Bird. So at this point, let us begin. I believe this evening we have 2 great instructors. We have Gary, KC2GA in New York State, and Paul, N1SEZ, in Connecticut. But I think he's still at Atlantic City or on the ocean front. We will see this evening. I believe we start off this evening with Gary. I think Gary has the first question. Let's see what happens. Go right ahead, gentlemen. It's all yours. Over, KD0CDQ.
Well, thank you, Mike, and hello there, Paul, and greetings to culture vultures everywhere. This is KC2GA. And doing my little bit here on the quiz, on the questions for our technician license. And we'll get things going with question T7C02. And it's kind of an important thing to know about, okay? Every ham at some point in their career is going to need some form of test equipment, okay? So this is talking about a piece of test equipment. It's asking which of the following instruments can be used to determine if an antenna is resonant at the desired operating frequency. Now, here's your choices. A, a VTVM. B, an antenna analyzer. C, a Q-meter. Or D, a frequency counter. Well, the answer to this one is B, an antenna analyzer. And I'll tell you, these are very important pieces of equipment. I don't think, honestly, every ham should have one. As a matter of fact, that's the most used piece of equipment, test equipment in my shack. And I just put it to some serious use in the past couple of days, just determining an issue I had with one of my antennas, and determined that I had a faulty unun in one of my antennas, and that helped me to find that. So valuable piece of test equipment. No ham should be without it. It's an antenna analyzer, and again, that's the piece of equipment that you want to memorize for the exam, okay? And we will move this right along to my partner in crime here, N1SEZ, with the next question. So, Paul, take it away.
Thank you, Gary, very much for that. And I have to get myself one of them antenna analyzers. I've been looking at them. I think they're pretty neat, especially when you can just throw a wire antenna up, hook it up to the analyzer, and it plots the graph and shows you where the thing is resonant. It's pretty nifty. The question I have, and by the way, this is N1SEZ, and I am in Danbury, Connecticut today. And the first question that I've got is T7C03. What, in general terms, is standing wave ratio, or SWR? A measure of how well a load is matched to a transmission line. B, the ratio of high to low impedance on a feed line. C, the transmitter efficiency ratio. Or D, an indication of quality of your station's ground connection. Well, in this case, the answer is A measure of how well a load is matched to a transmission line. Now, let me drop it. So some of the hairy details about this is we're talking about the power carried by a feed line is if the power carried by a feed line is transferred completely to a load, such as an antenna, when we're talking about, when the load and the feed lines are identical or matched, if the feed line and the load impedances do not match, some of the power is reflected by the load. Power traveling toward the load is forward power. Power reflected by the load is reflected power. And the greater difference between the feed line and the load impedances, the more power is reflected by the load. Let me drop it once more. So when you have a transmitter, the feed line, and an antenna that don't have impedances that match, you have this situation set up where a stationary wave-like interference pattern in the feed line called a standing wave. And the ratio of maximum value to minimum value of this interference power is called the standing wave ratio, or SWR. Now, the SWR is the same everywhere along that feed line, but it is usually measured by convenience at the transmitter's connection to the feed line. And that's T7C03. If there are any questions or comments, please come in now. And if nothing's heard, Gary, you take it away for the next question, for the next two questions. Okay, nothing heard. Gary, over to you.
All right, thank you, Paul. And just to follow up on the antenna analyzer, they are a great piece of equipment, and I heartily recommend getting one. I really do. I don't know how many years I got along without one, but I'll tell you, it really makes life a lot easier. I would definitely recommend getting one. We're moving along here to question T7C05, and we're continuing our discussion of the standing wave ratio. Okay, we're asking a question here. What is the approximate SWR value above which the protection circuits in most solid-state transmitters begin to reduce transmitter power? All right? Now, here's your choices. A, 2 to 1. B, 1 to 2. C, 6 to 1. Or D, 10 to 1. Your correct answer is A, 2 to 1. All right? Now, let me explain that a little bit for you. When the SWR value becomes too high, you can potentially damage the output circuits in your radio. As Paul was explaining, you're dealing with power being reflected back into the station. So too much power coming back in can damage your output circuit. Most modern transmitters have a built-in, what they call a fold-back circuit, which will reduce the power to a level that will not harm the transmitter if the SWR goes above 2:1, all right? So 2:1 is your max. Obviously, you want to keep it below that. But 2:1 is about where you can safely operate before things start to happen. All right, we'll throw it out for any questions and comments, and then we'll go back to the next question.
Six, Victor.
Question?
NO70, you get yourself a question. What's going on, sir?
Yes, the question about making these measurements and putting in the meters and so forth. Do you have to climb to the top of the tower to put the test equipment in, or can you do it somewhere else along the line, NO70?
Only if you're overly ambitious. No, and that's actually a good question because the how you read that value is on a meter that's on your radio. It's on your transceiver, okay? And you have a multimeter on that that has multiple functions. Usually it's power output and could indicate signal strength, and it could also indicate SWR. And that's where you see that value. So you switch your meter over to that while you're transmitting, and you can see how you're doing, and that's how you can tell the story. Did that help you out?
Sure did. Thank you very much, NO70.
Or if you want, you can climb the tower, but it's a little more efficient that way. Okay, we're going to move along now to question T7D as in dog 01, and that's asking which instrument you would use to measure electrical potential or electric potential or electromotive force. Now, here's a couple of terms that you're going to be hearing more and more often, potential and electromotive force. So how do you measure it? That's a question. Your choice is A, an ammeter, B, a voltmeter, C, a wave meter, or D, an ohm meter. Okay, your correct answer is B, a voltmeter. Why is that? Because electric potential or electromotive force is measured in volts. Okay, so when you hear those terms, you should begin to equate that in your mind with volts. Okay, any questions on that one? Okay, nothing heard, so we're going to move it right along to N1SEZ for the next question. Paul, take it away.
Okay, Gary, thank you very much. And we're going to continue down this this theme here of instruments and measurements with my next question, which is Tango 7 Delta 7, T7DO7. And the question reads, which of the following measurements are commonly made using a multimeter? A, SWR and RF power, B, signal strength and noise, C, impedance and reactance, or D, voltage and resistance. And the answer is D. The measurements commonly made by a multimeter are voltage and resistance. Now, the basic electrical test instruments are simple meters. Gary was just talking about one in the previous question, like a voltmeter. You also have ammeters and ohmmeters. So a separate meter isn't really needed, thankfully, for each parameter. That is why the multimeter was invented, which is short for multifunction meter. It measures all three values of voltage, current, and resistance with one meter, with one instrument. And those three things, voltage, current, and resistance, should sound familiar to you. And I'm thinking about Ohm's law. Okay, Gary, you're up next? No, I'm up next. I got the next question as well. Let me drop it. Okay, next question. Tango 8 Alpha 1, T8AO1. Which of the following is a form of amplitude modulation? A. Spread spectrum. B. Packet radio. C. Single sideband. Or D. Phase shift keying, otherwise known as PSK. And the answer is C. Single sideband is a form of amplitude modulation. Now, in an AM signal, the carrier doesn't carry any information. In addition, each sideband contains a copy of the modulating signal. Only one sideband is actually needed to transmit the information that you're sending out, and that's what single sideband or SSB signals are. Which of the following is a form of amplitude modulation? C, single sideband. Gary, over to you. Oh, well, let's see. Any questions or comments first? Nothing heard. Okay, Gary, take it away.
Hey, thank you, sir. And as we continue our discussion here about modulation, all right, we're asking a question, what type of modulation is most commonly used for VHF and UHF voice repeaters? Now, here's your choices. A, AM. B, SSB. C, PSK. Or D, FM. Your correct choice is D, FM. When you're listening to your repeaters, when you're talking to the when you're talking to your local repeater, you're using FM. Now, that's not to say that other than using accessing a repeater, that you can't use other forms of modulation on VHF and UHF. As a matter of fact, it's fairly common to use SSB, for instance, on 6 meters, okay? And there's a lot of choices available to you if you're operating what's called simplex. But if you're on a repeater, where most of you probably will find yourselves beginning to, in the beginning, you're going to be using FM. And it's important to know why you use it, all right? Now, one reason, probably the best reason to be using FM is that it's very quiet. You don't have a lot of hiss associated with it. You don't have the fading that you'd have with AM. And it's probably the most important thing is that FM travels in line of sight, so you have this direct line to the repeater as long as there's nothing in the way. And it gives you essentially a clear channel to that. So FM is your choice when you're talking to repeaters. Do we have any questions about that as we continue on tonight's class? All right, nothing heard on that. I would add it's not FM stereo. But we will go to the next question and turn it over to N1SEZ and Paul.
Okay, Gary, very good. Yeah, no stereo. But that's a shame. We'll take the next question here. I've got T8A11, Tango 8 Alpha 11. What is the approximate maximum bandwidth required to transmit a CW signal? Now, CW is what people commonly call Morse code. You're sending Morse code. You're modulating with CW. So the question is asking about the bandwidth. What's the approximate maximum bandwidth required to transmit a CW signal? A, 2.4 kilohertz. B, 150 hertz. C, 1,000 hertz. Or D, 15 kilohertz. And the answer is B, 150 hertz. Now, what we're talking about in this question is bandwidth. And bandwidth is, you know, you've got, if you're operating on a ham band, let's say the 40 meter band, well, there's only so much space in that band where you're allowed to operate. If you go outside of the band ends, you're operating, transmitting illegally. And when we speak about bandwidth, we're talking about how much of that amount of space that you've got available to you to use are you using for your transmission. And different modes require or use up different amounts of bandwidth. So CW is probably the most efficient and with the smallest, tiniest bandwidth at 150 hertz. Now, when we were speaking about single sideband before for voice, that takes 2 to 3 kilohertz of bandwidth to use a single sideband signal. AM, which was on my previous question, AM voice will chew up 6 kilohertz, almost double, which makes sense, of the single sideband. And an FM, like on those repeaters, an FM voice signal can use anywhere from 10 to 15 kilohertz of bandwidth. So that's what we mean by bandwidth. And the CW signal only requires 150 hertz. Any questions?
And us have another question, please.
Okay, George, go right ahead.
So if I'm thinking about trying to use Morse code after I get my license, will I have to take a Morse code test when I go and take my license test? Over.
George, that's an excellent question. And the answer to that is no. The FCC no longer requires, at least here in the United States, and the FCC only worries about the United States, does no longer has a CW requirement. Back in the old days, you did have to demonstrate various levels of proficiency at Morse code for various licensing levels. But that was dropped, I'm not good at dates, but a little while back, and that's no longer a requirement. And I think that a lot of people thought when they did that, that there would be, CW would be lost forever. But it turns out there's an awful lot of people who are just getting into CW because they're interested in it. And a lot of people are learning what an amazing and efficient form of communication it is. So it's still alive and well, but the answer to your question is, George, that no, it is not required, and no one has to worry about passing a Morse code test to get their technician license or any other license. Any other question?
KC2GA, just a quick comment, Paul.
Go right ahead, Gary.
Thank you, sir. You know, we seem to focus an awful lot on digital modes these days, but really, when you think about it, CW is the original digital mode, and it's as efficient as our modern-day digital modes are. CW certainly is the standard bearer for all digital mode efficiencies.
Absolutely. It's the grandfather of digital modes, for sure. Any other questions or comments?
A follow-up, please, NO70.
All right, take it away, George, N1SEZ.
So I've heard you talk about CW and then code. So what does CW stand for? Is it, you know, code wave or something? Over.
No, George, you're close. Continuous wave, continuous wave. And that continuous wave is modulated using usually a hand key of some sort or other, producing what everybody is familiar with, the bits and dahs of a Morse code signal.
Okay, thanks for your patience with all my questions, NO70.
It's not easy, George. Thanks for the questions. N1SEZ here. Gary, take it away.
Thank you, Paul. This is KC2GA as we continue our technician class here on SCARS. And we're going to walk into a question here that introduces one of the most important concepts in amateur radio operations. So listen closely to what we're talking about here. This is question T8B02. How much transmitter power should be used on the uplink frequency of an amateur satellite or space station? The questions, your choices are A, the maximum power of your transmitter, B, the minimum amount of power needed to complete the contact, C, no more than half the rating of your linear amplifier, or D, never more than 1 watt. Well, the answer to the question is B, the minimum amount of power needed to complete the contact. Now, this question is talking about an uplink to an amateur satellite or talking to the space station, which you can do. People do this all the time on VHF and UHF. There are ways to establish links to objects in space, and it's some pretty cool stuff. But it's not about where you're going with it, it's how you're doing it, all right? And the concept is always, whether you're on HF or VHF or whatever you're doing, the minimum amount of power needed to complete the contact. You just don't throw 1,500 watts out there to talk to the guy across town, okay? So that's the idea. Be intelligent with the amount of power that you're using. And again, this all goes back to that concept I was talking about in the last class of not creating interference. So use the minimum amount of power to make the contact. Any questions, any comments? Okay, nothing heard. Paul, we're up to you for the next couple of questions. So N1SEZ, the next two are yours.
Okay, Gary, very good. Yeah, folks, what Gary was getting at on that last question and what he was communicating is this is a common theme. So even though this question was about communication, satellite communication, you're going to see that same question show up multiple places on multiple tests. And it's always the same answer when asking about how much power you should use. And generally speaking, the idea is to use as little power as possible. It's just whatever is required to make the communication. No more, no less. All right. Next question I've got actually is another question regarding satellite communication. Let me drop it. Tango 8B07. With regard to satellite communications, what is Doppler shift? A change in the satellite orbit. B, a mode where the satellite receives signals on one band and transmits on another. C, an observed change in signal frequency caused by relative motion between the satellite and the Earth station. Or D, a special digital communications mode for some satellites. And with regard to satellite communications, Doppler shift, what is Doppler shift? The answer is C, an observed change in signal frequency caused by relative motion between the satellite and the Earth station. Let me drop it. So Doppler shift is an interesting phenomenon, and one that I'd imagine everyone is familiar with. You know, you can be standing outside by the road and a loud car comes driving down the road and you're stationary and the car's moving and you hear this characteristic change in pitch of the sound of the engine. You hear it all the time watching car races. The pitch starts out very high, and then as the car passes you and starts moving away from you, the pitch starts to drop in frequency. And this happens not only with sound, it can happen with radio signals, it can happen with light. It's a question of relative motions between the person receiving and whatever the object is that's transmitting. And it involves the compression or expansion of waves because of this relative motion. So the answer about the Doppler shift is an observed change in signal frequency caused by relative motion between the satellite and the Earth station. Any questions or comments? Okay, nothing heard. With that, N1SEZ here, we'll throw it back to Gary. And Gary, oh no, I'm not going to throw it back to you, Gary. Now that I actually look at my list, I got one more to go. Well, let's look at that one. All right, my last question, Tango 8 Charlie 4. Which of the following is good procedure when contacting another station in a radio contest? Let me drop it. A, sign only the last two letters of your call if there are many other stations calling. B, contact the station twice to be sure that you are in his log. C, send only the minimum information needed for proper identification and the contest exchange. That's the correct answer. Or D, all of these choices are correct. Now, radio contest, what the heck is that? Radio contesting is an activity that many hams enjoy. Not me personally, but many hams live for radio contesting. And in general, in a radio contest, your objective is to make as many short contacts as possible in a fixed period of time. And during these short contacts, you will make and exchange information with the station that you're in contact with. The information required for the exchange varies from contest to contest, but what they all have in common is brevity. Make the exchange and move on. In contesting, the quality of the communication is really unimportant. It's all about the quantity, the number of contacts that you can make. So get in and get out, and that's the gist of that question there. Any questions or comments? I'm so tongue-tied.
No question, QSL.
Go ahead.
That was just being a jerk. I point out that, for the folks that are listening, that one of the nice things that happens when you transition from technician to general is that you gain privileges on some of the HF bands, and one of the great bands for not listening to contests is 17 meters. So it's really kind of a good incentive too for you to think about getting that general once you get past the technician. Back to you, Paul.
Okay. Were there any other questions or comments? All right. Nothing heard. N1SEZ here. That's my last question. And Gary, once you finish this off, over to you.
Thank you, Paul, and a fine job as always. I guess we had a change on that last question, so I hope I'm reading the right one. I have T8C08 as the final question for tonight. And that question is asking, what is the Internet Radio Linking Project, or IRLP? Here's your choices. A technique to connect amateur radio systems, such as repeaters, via the Internet using Voice over Internet Protocol, or VoIP. B, a system for providing access to websites via amateur radio. C, a system for informing amateurs in real time of the frequency of active DX stations. Or D, a technique for measuring signal strength of an amateur transmitter via the Internet. Well, your correct answer for this question is A, a technique to connect amateur radio systems, such as repeaters, via the Internet over Voice over Internet Protocol, or VoIP. It's a system of standards, of methods, to establish what really can become a worldwide link, because you're going over the Internet. Again, you don't have to know the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. All you have to remember for this particular question is IRLP and VOIP, right? So just think of VoIP, Voice Over Internet, and IRLP, and you should be just fine. Are there any questions or any comments on this? Okay, nothing heard, so that's my last question. And Mike, we're going to turn it back to you. This is KC2GA.
Gary and Paul, another excellent presentation. I enjoyed it all the way through. There's a lot of times I had some questions, but I'm just going to let you go along with it. Very, very nicely done this evening. Very nicely done. And what's neat about that last question you just did, that IRLP, Internet Radio Linking Project, that we can do it on a little 2-meter, on a little 2-meter handheld. And that's what's so neat, because I've been in contact with Hawaii, a fellow out there, a couple of times, just on my little handheld. You can do that, IRLP. So that's neat stuff. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your questions. Now, I'm going to let you elaborate on anything you want to at this point. It can be related to the questions you just covered or just the testing in general. So not to make confusion, Gary, why don't you go first? Gary, you go ahead with anything you want to add this evening. You go ahead and start now. KD0CDQ, back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. And I think what I just would like to add is I guess we're probably, about the three-quarter mark here of the classes. First of all, to everybody that's hung in there, a little round of applause for you. So that's good work, hanging in. Because I know this has got to be pretty foreign stuff to many of you. It's also exciting stuff. I mean, Paul and I have been fooling around with this stuff for a very long time, and it's longer than I care to remember, I know that. It never loses its fascination, and it never gets old. It really doesn't. And it's there. We've said this a bunch of times, that there is no shortage of new things to latch onto in this hobby. If you ever get bored doing amateur radio, you're not doing it right. That's for sure. There's just an unlimited amount of things to get involved with. So that's one thing to always keep in mind. And the other thing to keep in mind is that don't stop once you get the technician ticket. I am Mr. Advocate for upgrading, if only to gain the privileges that help you expand your involvement in the hobby. It's getting on the air locally with a 2-meter repeater, that handheld and a 2-meter is great, but don't stop there. Get on 6 meters for one thing. You can do that with your technician ticket. Let me buy a nickel here before I time out. But get on 6. Study for the general. Learn how to work on the HF bands, because it is quite a different animal. Just get involved in this thing, because it's just a ton of fun. So that's what I've got for my two bits. Paul, did you want to add anything? KC2GA and N1SEZ.
Sure, Gary. I just wanted to say that kudos to the students out there. You're in the home stretch. Just keep studying the materials. Start taking the sample exams on QRZ. They're available in a bunch of different places. You can do them online, and you just start taking the tests. And you keep practicing them, and just by virtue of seeing the questions over and over again, your scores will start to go up, and you get up around 85% every time you go through the questions. You're ready to go take your test, and you'll get your license. That's all there is to it. And like Gary said, it's a great hobby. You can stick with this license and do an awful lot of stuff. there's a lot more you can do if you upgrade, and I also am a big advocate of upgrading. Let me drop it. And the other thing I have to say, I want to express my thanks. First of all, I want to thank George N070, who plays perfectly the role of inquisitive student and keeping us honest with some questions that, even though we're answering the questions, we're using some terms that some people don't know what the heck we're talking about. What the hell is CW? So, George, thank you for that. And Mike, for all of your work doing the preambles and the closings and everything else. And I've been doing this for quite a few years now on South Cars here, and you've been involved in every single one of them in this role. And it just wouldn't be, excuse me, it just, I don't have a cough switch here. It just wouldn't be the same without you. So thank you for all of that, too. N1SEZ, 73, and I'll be listening out.
I'm going to give George a chance if he's got something he wants to say. N070, George, you want anything you want to add? Our only student this evening, go ahead, please, George.
Well, a question does, thank you, KD0CDQ and the South Bars Technician Class course, N070, and thank you, Paul and Gary. Well, one question does come to mind since you've been talking about taking the test, and I appreciate your answering the question so that I can go maybe pass my test now for technician, even though I already do have a license, but it should help me pass the test. Once I pass my test, do I have to wait for something to come in the mail before I can start operating? Or if nothing comes in the mail, how do I know if I pass the test or if I'm legal to operate? And that's my last question for my last new student question tonight. KD0CDQ, N070.
Let's not all jump at once. Who wants to answer that question? Let me give Paul a shot. Do you want to answer it? Or if not, I will do it. But go ahead, Paul.
Or Six Vector.
Or Six Vector. There you are. Gordon, why don't you answer that question, George? Go ahead.
I wasn't sure you were going to let loose of the rope. I'm not going to steal Paul's thunder. You want to take that one, Paul? Over.
Well, George finally got me. I know the answer. I don't remember the name of the form. When you take your test and you pass, you will be given a piece of paper that you can use as your temporary license. And I don't know if you have to wait until it shows up on the FCC site or not. I think you can operate immediately. So you got me, George. And there is a name for that sheet of paper that you receive that allows you to operate before you get your ticket in the mail. Gordon?
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Well, yes and no, sir. You have to realize that what we're addressing here tonight is the technician class. So they do not have a call sign yet assigned. They may get that piece of paper saying that they've passed the test. That's appropriate once you've got a call sign and you've moved up to a general class license or higher. The moment that you get that piece of paper, you can start using the frequencies. But the answer, as I understand that, George, and I think you know the answer already. You're doing a great job of being the devil's advocate here tonight. The moment that it is posted on the FCC Internet documents, if you see that it is posted and your call sign is there, you are good to go. How about that one, George? Over.
That sounds nice. I could start operating as soon as I see that on the FCC website and not have to wait for a piece of paper. Boy, that's pretty snazzy nowadays. Thanks, thanks, Gordon. Appreciate that. KY6V, or I guess back to net control, KD0CDQ, N070. Thanks, guys.
This is KD0CDQ. That's right. You just get nervous and you kind of wait to see what call sign you were given to get started from the technician license. I was going through my drawer here on my desk trying to find that form that you use when you get the general and the extra, but I didn't find it. But there is a form, but that's not with the tech. We're to stay with the tech. But what I want to stress now, that these recordings will be located on the website. I'm going to give you the website again. It's www.scarsvoip.com. That's www.scarsvoip.com. And if you want to get in touch, if you have a question about these tests or you have any kind of a question, I'm going to give you the email address that you can send your request through. That's voip@scarsvoip.com. Again, voip@scarsvoip.com. Any questions you might have. So we're like ghosts. I know you're not seeing us, but we're always there. There's always somebody that's willing to answer your email. And of course, you can find these questions on the web. And this is just a basic to get you motivated, get you going. And a nice thing I'm going to tell you in a moment. Let me let it drop. I don't get too much into contests, only if there's something relevant, then I'll get into it, like about some Navy ship somewhere, then I'll try to contact it. But when you work events, that's the place you learn how to be a ham radio operator, working events, different events in the community. And no one cares if you're a tech, a general, extra. It doesn't matter. No one asks you. There's no badge on your cap. And I noticed just this week with the event I worked, there was some technicians, and I don't know, it was their first time out. I didn't even know that. You couldn't tell. They were professional. They were on there and doing everything proper. So once you get that tech license, start volunteering with groups. Do things. And this way, meet people. Meet people that will help you and people that have a common hobby with you. So this is a great hobby. It's scary in the beginning. You're afraid to say your call sign. You don't know if you're kind of frightened, but you do it anyway. We all start somewhere. So enjoy these classes. This is a start. This is like you're picking up the corn cob in your first bite, okay? And the corn cob, there's a lot more to it, but enjoy. Okay, I'm going to let it drop now, and if anybody has any more comments, I'm going to turn the recording off now. And if you have any comments, we now can make comments without the recording going. This is KD0CBQ, back to anyone interested. Go ahead.
Yeah, 6-Victor for short, Mike. Try that again, Mike. No audio. Were you recognizing me? And I think Paul was in there also.
Yes, Gordon, go ahead. You've got the floor. KD0CBQ, over to you.
I think maybe Paul and I were doubling, too. I just saw the tail end of his key up. That's N1SEZ. I wanted to thank Paul. I wanted to thank Gary. And I want to thank you, Mike, for a wonderful evening. And to repeat what has really already been mentioned, this is the close of class number 6 out of a total of 8. And the students are now 75% complete through the course. There will be 2 more classes, and that will be Sunday night, this coming Sunday night, and this coming Tuesday. A week from tonight will be the last one of the Mohegans. It's important at this point. Let me buy a nickel. It is important for our students to think very seriously about starting the practice tests that Paul mentioned. If you look at the website under the support material for the technician class, you will find an entry in there that leads you to a website. It just says practice test, click here. That will send you to QRZ.com. And in specific, the page that treats the testing, and that's actually qrz.com/ham test is the full link. So you can either type that in and use it. My cell phone's going off and annoying the heck out of me, and it can wait. And I think that's all. Grand job, and thank you, Mike. Back to you, sir. KY6V, over.
KY6 Victor, I have just one question. I'll be up with Rick next Sunday and next Tuesday. You will send me a list of the questions, I would suppose, because I don't have Rick's questions at this point. Did you want me to do the preamble next sessions? I can do that as well. Just let me know, Gordon. Over to you.
No, the boss is talking in the background. She says that she'll handle the preamble next week. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't have Rick's stuff yet, but the moment I get it, you'll get it, and I'm sure that he'll send it to you at the same time he sends it to me, Mike. Over.
Very good. I'm looking forward to hear Kathy's golden voice again. She's got a nice, I don't know if I want to call it a twang or what, but it's from Michigan, so I don't quite understand where it comes from. Just a very beautiful voice you have, Kathy. So I'd much rather have you read the preamble if it's possible. Very good. Very good, folks. Well, I've got on the top of the hour, I've got another net to check into. So thank you, everyone. Thank you for your confidence in me and letting me do this. I enjoy this, and it keeps me tuned into Echolink, because I don't use it that often. So many people have trouble with Echolink. I don't understand why it's difficult, but it is for many folks. Okay, this is KD0CDQ, and God bless every one of you out there. Paul and Gary and, of course, Gordon and, of course, Kathy. And thank you for the student we had, George, tonight. I appreciate his questions. They were nice and naive, but they're the kind of questions you're going to get. That's all I've got. This is KD0CDQ73.